This is Politics with Amy Walter. Did your Thanksgiving sound anything like this?
Oh, Monica, that was the best Thanksgiving dinner ever. It was so good.
Stuff ourselves like pigs.
So that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna make peace with each other, and we're gonna get it in writing.
The cranberry sauce, we're having mashed potatoes. Everyone's thinking.
How about a Thanksgiving feast? You can carve the turkey.
Well, for many families, the holidays don't always go so nice.
Everything's cold, the turkey's dried out, and the stuffing's all soggy.
There's a jungle out there. I had to beat an old lady with a stick to get these cranberries.
What kind of a Thanksgiving dinner is this?
What did he do to my mother's china?
They're all beautiful until they're snarling after your trust fund.
Sure, it's nice to gather everyone to celebrate this time of year, but depending on the kind of family you come from, there can be just as much laughter and love as there is screaming, yelling, and tears. And politics doesn't help.
Thank you.
Tonight we give thanks.
Thank you all very much.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Amid our deeply polarized times, some relationships are being tested like never before.
Yes, we have had a break in our relationship as a result of the 2016 election.
Our friendship slowly faded over the next year. Some of my relationships have been strained. Some have ended entirely.
I lost a friend over politics. No matter how hard I tried to avoid the topic, she constantly brought it up.
I had to deactivate my Facebook account.
One man whom I respect has totally stopped having anything to do with me.
She barely talks to me anymore.
My next guests, instead of letting political differences destroy their relationship, have instead embraced their political polarization.
That is the bond. That is the basis of the friendship.
Ginger Ikuno and Judy Mooney have been friends a long time. They are both in their 70s and consider each other among their closest friends and most trusted confidants.
We can honestly and openly tell each other what we see with the other person, and it's like having another set of eyes.
It's a great sounding board, someone you can talk to that gives you an honest opinion about things.
And kind of brings you back to center, and that's what I really appreciate with our friendship.
But when it comes to politics, they see things very differently. Judy is conservative and aligns with the Republican Party. Ginger is a liberal and votes Democrat. And despite the intense political tension and anger that's emerged in our national politics over the last few years, Judy and Ginger's friendship has not only persevered, it's thrived. Ginger takes us back to the beginning, nearly 11 years ago.
I'm in real estate, and I had a contractor, and Judy is the person who was with the contractor. And they had a party and invited us over, and that's when I met Judy. I immediately felt a kinship with her. She's a terrific person and very genuine, and we became fast friends.
At first, they didn't know very much about their political ideologies, but
it didn't take us too long to figure that out.
Right. Judy sends out emails to many of her friends regarding different opinions about different events, and they kind of slant more to the conservative side. And so what I would do is I would send her back emails telling her the liberal side of what she was saying.
And how did that go, Judy? How did it feel to get an email back saying, here's a different point of view?
Well, you know, that's fine because she's allowed her point of view just because I don't totally agree with it. Our biggest thing was when we had the election, the last election, she said to me, promise me you won't vote for Trump. And I said, only if you promise you won't vote for Hillary. So we just laughed about that. But we have our differences of opinion. We will talk about our differences of opinion. But if it starts getting like really hairy, then we just drop it rather than ruin a friendship.
Was it always like this, though? Was it like this 10 years ago, just in terms of being able to, or in this case, not being able to talk about politics?
Well, actually, we do talk about politics. It's just that I don't try to make Judy believe my side of it. I tell her what I believe and why I believe what I think, just to get her opinion. I mean, and we do have some very interesting discussions because she will tell me her side and I tell her mine. And, you know, sometimes we meet in the middle. And sometimes we don't, but that's okay.
I asked Judy and Ginger to tell me about some of the conversations they've had about politics and how they avoided turning their dialogue into arguments, fights, or worse. They told me about a recent debate they had over the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. As you remember, the confirmation process was heated and hundreds of Americans flooded the U.S. Capitol building in Washington, D.C. to protest. Among them was this young woman who confronted Senator Jeff Flake just before he decided to delay his vote to confirm.
On Monday, I stood in front of your office with Addie Barkin. I told the story of my sexual assault. I told it because I recognized in Dr. Ford's story that she's telling the truth.
We kind of had a back and forth on this hashtag Me Too stuff. And
yeah, so tell me about that.
Yeah, because I understand that a lot of this stuff goes on, the sexual harassment, but to me it seems like it's just kind of gotten out of hand. You know, 36 years, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I was 15 and he did this, and you're going to ruin this man's life. Ginger has a little bit different perspective on it.
Well, what I was trying to point out is that if we don't let people know that certain attitudes and certain ways with which you view a situation, if you don't let people know that this is wrong and that it shouldn't be done, then they're going to continue to do it and they're going to continue to think that it's okay, and it will then escalate. So there's got to be a point with which you have to stop it.
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah, and the pendulum has to swing very far in one direction, almost to the ridiculous, in order to let people meet in the middle.
Hmm. Well, I think it's already hit the ridiculous. Now it's time to slow it back the other way.
Which part has hit the ridiculous?
People getting into elevators with congressmen screaming at them, you know, you want people to rape my daughter, yada, yada, yada. That's ridiculous. I mean, there was no absolute proof that he raped her. Did he grope her? I don't know. I wasn't there. He says no. She says yes. You know, it's he said, she said. But it's the other people that weren't there, that weren't involved, going ballistic over this whole thing without any proof, without, you know, there's no substantial evidence. You don't attack somebody. You don't scream at your congressmen, your senators. You don't scream at them and scream things at them just because you believe this woman. I mean, to me, that is the way far extreme.
If I remember correctly, that woman screaming at him in the elevator actually had an effect, so that later on he had changed his vote, if I
right,
remember correctly.
The guy had no guts.
Well, either that or he pondered over maybe what the woman was saying.
Well, I just think he was scared, seriously. I mean,
women
have a lot of power these days. And
they should.
Well, I know, but I don't think they should have so much power that they should bully somebody into changing their opinion. And that's what that woman was doing. She was flat out bullying that guy.
Well, I think that what she was doing was she was very, very emotionally charged, and that she felt that was the only way that she could get her point across. And I don't know if I'd call it bullying. She was definitely aggressive. But anyway, she got her point across.
Oh, yeah. He changed his mind.
So this was very instructive. So what advice do you have for friends that maybe aren't able to have these discussions and they've literally broken up as friends because they say, I can't talk to you if you feel this way about President Trump. I can't talk to you if you feel this way about this issue.
I just flat out feel sorry for them.
I was talking to a friend about this, and I think what it is in the conversation, when you talk to someone about your point of view, you talk to them in such a way that you don't try to back them into a corner. You don't try to, as you were saying, bullying. You give them your opinion and yet give them enough space
in the conversation so that they feel comfortable in responding to what you say. What I value about our friendship is the fact that we can talk about things that we don't agree on, because it kind of gets boring when you're preaching to the choir all the time, you know? So it gives you fodder for thinking. I mean, if somebody doesn't tell you something that's contrary to what you believe, then you're never going to be able to expand your point of view.
That's Judy, what about you?
When I get into a political conversation with anybody other than Ginger, because Ginger and I have our own way of handling it, I usually will back down and back out, because I'm a conservative, and if I get into a conversation like this, it's usually with someone that is not only liberal, but way left. And the few times that I've talked to a couple of people like that, there is no discussing with them. It is, they are right, I am wrong. And so I just prefer to be quiet and back out. If you want to be friends with someone, you have to be able to do what Ginger and I do. We share our ideas. I understand some of the stuff she says. She understands some of the points I have. But we don't get into a point where it's a screaming, shouting match and you're wrong, I'm right, that type of thing. I don't think it's ever gone that far.
No. I think the word I was looking for was confrontational. We are not confrontational in our conversation.
There are five of us gals that do things together. Three are liberals and two of us are conservatives. And we went on a retreat together. And I kind of felt like I was ganged up on and outnumbered, except the other gal that's a conservative is very, very, very vocal. So I just sort of sat back and listened. Remember when we went down to two back?
Mm-hmm.
When you got into that political conversation?
Take a knee?
Yes. That, to me, got confrontational. And I don't care for that. So I just sort of shut up and sat down.
Okay. To tell you the truth, I'm sorry that happened. I didn't really see it that way, but I don't remember all the details about that that particular conversation.
But we're still friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually,
all of us are.
Yeah, all of us, all five of us are still friends.
Judy and Ginger, thank you so much for sharing your stories with us.
Well, thank
you. You're welcome.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity.
Ginger Iconow is liberal and currently works as a realtor. Her good friend, Judy Mooney, is conservative and retired. Coming up, how political divisions are literally making our Thanksgiving shorter.
Over 40 million hours of Thanksgiving dinner were lost in 2016 because of partisan discord.
Some fascinating research coming up next. Stay with us.
Go to omahasteaks.com and enter code TAKEAWAY into the search bar to get 74% off Omaha Steaks Family Gift Package, now only $49.99. Order now and you'll get 4 hand-cut aged-to-tenderness top sirloin steaks, 2 savory premium pork chops, 4 chicken fried steaks, 4 Omaha Steaks burgers, 4 snappy kielbasa sausages, all beef meatballs, 4 perfectly browned potatoes au gratin, 4 made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets, plus get 4 more burgers for free. Again, just go to omahasteaks.com, type takeaway into the search bar, and add the family gift package to your cart. Don't wait. Order today.
Support for this podcast comes from Babbel. People around the world are learning new languages with the Babbel Language Learning app. And you can too. Learn Spanish, French, Italian, German, Russian, Swedish, and more with Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons. Babbel users say they're amazed at how fast they learned and that they are confident in speaking their new language. Start learning a new language today. Just go to babbel.com and use offer code TAKEAWAY to get 50% off your first 3 months. That's Babbel, BABBEL.com, offer code TAKEAWAY for 50% off your first 3 months.
Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Amy Walter. We just heard from friends Judy and Ginger about how they overcome their political differences, but not all relationships are able to persevere in the same way.
Keith Chen is a professor of economics at the UCLA Anderson School of Management, and he studied the effect of this divisive political moment at the holiday dinner table. Keith, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me on.
So, Keith Chen, tell us how an awkward family Thanksgiving dinner in 2016 led you to research, to do really intricate research, actually, on whether political polarization is damaging our family relationships.
Oh, my goodness. Well, as everyone, I'm sure, still painfully remembers, 2016 was a very surprising election. What me and my co-author, Ryan, then experienced was just politics infecting everything. Like, it was just impossible to not talk about what had just happened, and sometimes in very emotionally negative and raw ways, at, you know, the water cooler, at lunches with friends, and then eventually even in kind of close family settings. And what we kind of took from some of our own personal experiences was, wow, you know, political partisanship seems to be all-consuming, and also just kind of degrading of what we typically think of as kind of some of our closest family relationships. And we thought, well, if this is happening to our own friends and family, is there some way that we can bring to bear kind of research to just quantify and know how much this has become now kind of a general phenomenon in American life?
And how did you do that?
So in particular, what we did was we tried to figure out people's political leanings by figuring out for the owner for any particular smartphone what voting precinct they appear to live in. So, you know, most voting precincts in the United States now swing in presidential elections at least 80-20, which, you know, reflects something that most people probably feel, which is that fewer and fewer Americans than even 10 or especially even 20 years ago live anywhere near somebody who voted for a different candidate. So if we can take a good guess at where you roughly where you live, increasingly, we have a very, very good idea of who you voted for. What we then do with those data is we say, okay, well, let's watch the owner of a smartphone kind of travel for Thanksgiving dinner, and let's ask, well, if somebody from a very Clinton-leaning precinct eats Thanksgiving dinner, travels for Thanksgiving to eat in a very kind of Trump-leaning district, how much shorter is their Thanksgiving dinner in 2016 than that same dinner was in 2015? Okay, that's kind of the core kind of statistical comparison that we're doing. And basically what we find is that families that likely had intra-family partisan discord saw their Thanksgiving dinners contract by 47 minutes on average across the country. You know, their 2016 dinners versus their 2015 dinners, their 2016 dinner lengths versus kind of close neighbors, like a neighbor who lives like less than a mile away but traveled to a much more politically matched Thanksgiving dinner. You know, their dinners were unaffected from 2015. And then finally, what was kind of most interesting to us is that you can really pin a lot of this effect on political advertising. So, for example, I live in California, and California is not even close on the presidential level to being a swing state. And so in 2016, I basically saw zero presidential political ads. If you live in Orlando, on the other hand, over the course of 2016, you saw 27,000 presidential level political ads run in your broadcast TV market. What we find is that for every 1,000 political ads that were run in your political market, your Thanksgiving dinner contracted in 2016, got shorter by an additional 1.5 minutes. And what that means is that if you lived in a swing state, your Thanksgiving dinner, if it involved kind of families that likely voted for opposite candidates, got shorter by over 1.5 hours. And that's off of a base of about a four and a half hour Thanksgiving, average Thanksgiving dinner. So basically, you know, you add that up across the country, and over 40 million hours of Thanksgiving dinner were lost in 2016 because of partisan discord.
And so the theory being, boy, you know what, if I have to go be with my in-laws and politics is going to come up, let's just make this as short as possible so we can get out of there
and not have to get into a fight. Is that the theory?
Absolutely. That, you know, you're a little bit less likely to take that second slice of dessert. Right.
No, I'm good. We're all good.
It was so delicious, but I'm so stuffed. I've got to head out. Or, you know, the your likelihood of staying for the football game, any of those effects. Now, the data does suggest some interesting patterns. One thing that you can do is you can independently look at the effect of Clinton travelers who eat in Trump districts or Trump travelers who eat in Clinton districts. What we find is that relative to 2015, Clinton voters were 8 percentage points less likely to even travel for Thanksgiving. And that effect is especially true if the places that they tend to go for Thanksgiving dinner, for example, were heavily Trump districts. And there's no comparable effect for the willingness to travel amongst Thanksgiving travelers who live in kind of heavily Trump districts. So Clinton voters appeared more gun-shy about traveling for Thanksgiving at all.
Now here we are in 2018. Do you think that these findings would hold up today, or do you think that there's evidence that people have managed to come together and maybe they are not shortening Thanksgiving for political reasons? They may be shortening them for other reasons or not traveling for other reasons.
Oh my gosh, Amy, that's exactly the right question. I mean, so what we've done is some preliminary work on Thanksgiving in 2017. And fortunately, Americans seem to have been able to get past kind of some of the political rancor. And what we observed was Thanksgiving dinners in 2017 clawed back more than half of the losses that we saw occur in 2016. Now, as you can imagine, we're really, really interested in what happens in 2018, because mm-hmm. one other thing that you worry about is that 2017 just wasn't an election year. But it appears, at least from the 2017 data, that American families have found a way past this, right? That they develop strategies, you know, to not let politics kind of infect kind of, you know, family relationships. In fact, you can already see this in a lot of surveys in 2017. It was the number one thing that families wanted to not talk about over Thanksgiving in 2017 was politics, whereas going into 2016, it wasn't even in the top five. I think people are finding a way past the rancor. And if we can't get past and talk with people who we love, you know, about politics, I mean, who can we talk to?
Keith Chen, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Keith Chen is a professor of economics at the UCLA Anderson School of Management.
Partisan divide in this country is growing, and people see their partisanship as almost as part of their identity.
That's Carol Doherty. He's director of political research at the Pew Research Center.
And that's not necessarily a positive thing. They don't necessarily have fondness for their own political party. It's more because of the negativity in politics and the negativity they feel towards the opposing party. We saw this trend start in the mid-1990s, and it's been pronounced ever since, and it's to the point now where partisanship overwhelms other divisions in societies, demographic differences, gender, race, and almost any other line that you can imagine.
And it's true. Americans are more in their corners than ever before. And that also means that finding common ground feels harder than ever before. Many of you have been sharing your own stories of the strain politics has had on your relationships.
I'm quite conservative. One man whom I respect has totally stopped having anything to do with me because he learned I supported President Trump. I miss his friendship. Many of my friends are very liberal. I have learned not to disclose my opinions in any way. I don't respect or appreciate their apparent inability to explore ideas and differing opinions without attack, nor do I wish to lose their friendship.
A few of my friends voted for the current president. We've never spoken of it, though it wouldn't bother me if we did. They know my position. I do not hold back in my criticism of him. Oddly, I've never heard theirs.
Yes, we have had a break in our relationship as a result of the 2016 election. We finally have begun talking this year, but not in any real meaningful way. And I'm not sure that will ever be reconciled as a result of what's occurred.
I lost a friend over politics. No matter how hard I tried to avoid the topic, she constantly brought it up. Finally, I just gave up. It was very frustrating. And she was so shocked. She didn't understand why our disagreements bothered me. She actually said she thought they were invigorating. Oy vey.
For lots of you, the tension has hit close to home.
My mother and I barely talk anymore. She voted against everything she raised me to believe was right and good. And when I asked her to explain it, she refused. I asked her again to respect me enough to just walk me through the decision to vote how she did. And again, she refused. And since then, we've just, she barely talks to me anymore.
My father and I have a very difficult time speaking these days because of the thin ice created by politics. We still speak and we respect each other, but we speak very, very carefully and avoid the subject.
Then there are folks like Ken who told us he doesn't have this problem because he asks about a person's politics before they even get involved.
Of course, opinions and mindsets change over time, but it's something that is important in an open communication to have and be on the same page politically wise.
Meanwhile, Greg said he learned a lesson after losing a friend.
Many years ago, my closest childhood friend had told me he was planning to vote for a presidential candidate who I had strong feelings against. Using some harsh language, I told him that I believed he was a fool and that his choice was un-American and even dangerous. Our friendship never recovered, but I learned a harsh lesson. Be careful of heated political conversations.
But others of you said you found ways to work through differences.
We just decided to live and let live long ago, and we just don't talk about politics because we're on the opposite ends of the spectrum.
I had to deactivate my Facebook account right after the Kavanaugh hearing. It absolutely was going to implode many important relationships, and I had to just stop.
We keep our mouth shut, let persons with very strong opinions talk, and keep it away from trying to convince, convert, or argue with them. This is what makes this country great. The right to speak is a basic American right.
Thanks to everyone for weighing in. You can call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE with your story of how politics have impacted your relationships. And if so, have you been able to reconcile? That number again, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or tweet us at The Takeaway. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in on this holiday weekend. We hope that you had a healthy and safe Thanksgiving and a great long weekend. And of course, call us anytime at 877-8-MY-TAKE or send us a tweet at The Takeaway. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Amy Walter, and this is The Takeaway.
Come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.